You're listening to Inside iOS Dev, show about real-world iOS development. Today with you, your hosts, Alex Bush.
And Andrew Rohn.
And today we are going to talk about Swift UI, the thing everyone's excited about and all the hype and rage happening about.
Sure. I think in our first impressions episode, which came out last, just to recap on that, you talked about Swift UI. Can you just quickly recap your opinions on Swift UI?
So opinions thus far, it looks like React paradigm with state and a lot of new protocols. And I am afraid it's going to be very messy because we are using the same UI for multiple platforms. And even though it sounds amazing as a sort of idea to share code like that, in reality and practice, I'm concerned that it might just grow out of proportion and blow up. But yeah.
Okay, so I think the perhaps concern there is that there is an abstraction called Swift UI that tries to sort of unify building UI from multiple platforms, and fundamentally all of those UI are different. And so if you go into this with the expectation that I'm going to write one Swift UI sort of implementation for my user interface, then I will be able to use it on Mac and iPad and iOS, then that is a misplaced it's too hopeful or too much of a dream. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much, yeah. We were able already to do that for the most part, except maybe actually literally using UI view subclasses and UI views in Mac apps and vice versa, AppKit and S views on iOS. But conceptually, at least iPad and iOS, you already were able to use UIKit on iOS, or rather iPhone and iPad, but sort of in practice, in production code bases, they are still, even though reusable, still the flow of the application, if you will, quite often is different. So you can't really reuse it. You have to rewrite it, if that makes sense. And sometimes people won't, and they would just keep it in one place, but then there's a lot of it breeds a lot of if-elsing and complex logic.
Okay, so that is perhaps one purported benefit, and I feel like we may be getting it wrong. Maybe we're simplifying it, to be honest. So let's say that someone said, no, I'm not going to use Swift UI for multiple platforms. The reason why I'm going to use it is because it uses this more modern declarative syntax and binding, data binding to update the UI automatically. And maybe we should go into that first, actually, before we talk about it. But I want to circle back to that and then ask what you think about it. So basically, one thing that's unique to Swift UI relative to the old layout that we did in the sort of Apple developer world was the layout is going to be a descriptive, declarative layout framework, which means, well, auto layout is actually a declarative layout framework, but this is going to be much more all encompassing. You're going to also use it for animation. You're also going to use it for responding to state updates. And so just to get more concrete, they have these new, well, in one talk that I watched, it's data flow through Swift UI. They talk about the different tools for data flow, and they have this bindable object protocol. They have this at state and at binding property modifiers, I forget what they call them, property decorators, something like that, or property wrapper, that will sort of hook into Swift UI to let Swift UI know how to react to changes in this variable. I'll go into that more. There's also some guiding principles that they have when they were thinking of Swift UI and sort of how it interacts with the data of your app. One thing is, every time you read a piece of data in your view, and you create a dependency for that view, and with Swift UI, you simply describe that dependency and the declarative nature will handle it. And then the second principle is every piece of data read in your view hierarchy has a source of truth, and you should always have a single source of truth. Given these two guiding principles, this is sort of what they use to help inform the data, I guess, model of how to use Swift UI to build your application UI. Now, I think these are really great guiding principles, especially the single source of truth and just being careful and more thoughtful and explicit about your dependencies in the view. I think this is really great and smart because a lot of bugs come from having multiple representations of state in your UI. For example, in UIKit world, you may have a toggle that in itself has within that view says whether it's on or off. But you may have a view model or something else, some other model representing the state of whether that toggle is on or off. And those can get, they can lose synchronization, right? Because you have multiple sources of truth. Now imagine you have a very complex UI and then you have multiple, even more sources of truth. Things can get really confusing and get out of sync. And I think this leads to a lot of, this is like a class of bugs on its own. So this, what they're proposing instead is this sort of, what would it be, like a functional, reactive sort of binding of the UI state to automatically update when some model that you've bound it to changes.
Right. So this, to me, and I haven't looked into it in detail, but sort of the things that I glanced at, this looks like actually more pure MVVM implementation, where the sort of canonical view models data is bound to, or view bound to view models data and reacts to changes in the data in the view model. So this seems like exactly what we've got now.
What do you mean by got now?
So we now, Apple with Swift UI, you inject your model object, right? And let's say it's with this at state, how did you call it?
Property modifier. Property wrapper.
Right. And then roughly speaking, well, maybe actually not roughly speaking, pretty much literally, the view observes changes on that state property. And as soon as it changes, it updates itself.
Correct.
So that's data binding right there. And, well, MVVM data binding. That's how MVVM works. Just previously, you would have to do the plumbing, the wiring of that UI update yourself with, like, RX Swift or something like that. But effectively, you could get the same.
Yeah, but now with Swift UI, I guess you just have it inbuilt into this framework, and since it's made by Apple, it's probably going to play a little nicer because they're Apple. They can make it work nicer. I think this is one important concept here is this data binding, which one important corollary of that is you should not modify the view state yourself. The binding is made, and the view state will know when to mutate its own view hierarchy. It'll regenerate it. And I think this is useful because there's this tighter sort of synchronization between the state of your application and the view state. Because as I described before, you may switch a button to be on, but the model object of which it's supposed to represent is set to off. And with this, by reacting directly to the model changes and you not modifying the view manually, that sort of eliminates an entire class of bugs there where there's this data desynchronization, missynchronization. So with these property wrappers, what you do is you will have a variable that represents your state. And you there's one with the little at symbol that you put before your property, and it's called at state. And what this does is it augments your property with additional behavior whenever it's read or written. And so every one of these is the source of truth that I was describing before. And by putting this property wrapper in front of the variable, you're letting Swift UI know that this thing is to be sort of bound to the UI is bound to this. Another one is...
Wait, sorry, to just sort of have a one addition to it. And basically, when you have that at state property or variable property defined, every time you override it, right? Every time you assign to it, then it will trigger UI re-render through bindings.
Right, correct. There's a second property modifier called at object binding. And you use it in the same way that you did the at state. And the difference with this property modifier versus at state is you're going to use this with reference types rather than value types. And this is mostly what Apple advises you use. This is going to be the types that you define. So you'll mostly be working with this, especially if it's your own types. And with this bindable object or object binding property wrapper, the model object that you use this property wrapper on will need to conform to the bindable object protocol. And what that will do is you will add on a you'll have a subject that will be notified whenever a change is necessary. And the thing that's important here is because it's your type, it's your object, you need to tell the system when to update its state. And also because it's a reference type, it may not know. A value type is going to be completely replaced. It's a completely different object in memory, and so it will that they can sort of know to always update. But here, since it's a reference type, you need to sort of emit a sort of
an event.
Yeah, an event. Yeah, publish an event to let any relevant, I guess, views in this case know that, oh hey, I need to react to that. So this is the other property wrapper,
and basically it's effectively, can think of it as a reactive stream of data that you're implementing yourself. And then you'll have inside of that object that adopts the protocol. What was the name?
Bindable object.
Bindable object. Inside of that thing that adopts it, you would, as you said, trigger when the data changes, whatever necessary business logic and processing and formatting, whatever you do, then you trigger did change event or something like that.
So this is kind of it in a nutshell. There's more details, honestly, in this talk, but I think this is the important part, is that you want to have a single source of truth, and you want to bind your UI state to the model state, and Apple, specifically Swift UI, provides these syntax and notation for sort of making the plumbing of setting that up easier for you. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. And I think another thing that's important is, and I think that why they adopted this is it has the one-way data flow. And the reason why this is important, I think, and why they moved towards this, away from sort of imperatively updating your state manually, locally, like, for example, when you have your the switch I've been talking about, before a user would tap a button and you may have to, on your UI, say, you know, switch dot is on assign false or whatever. That was like you manually updating the state locally.
It's very imperative.
It's very imperative because you're manually doing that. That's going away. And the reason why I think this is important is because with multiple windows now, you're going to have to make sure that all relevant views that, let's say this switch, for some reason, you have two windows open and the model object that's backing this switch is being used in two different windows or being referenced in two different windows, and you need to update the state. Well, given the old approach of sort of going in there and only locally updating the state, it's not going to reflect in your other window. So I think this is why Apple's going towards this one-way data flow now, is because it's becoming more necessary, because you're going to have view state that needs to update in multiple places. And it's going to be much easier if you just set the binding and you can, and then you can have your, you know, multiple windows representing the single, you know, source of truth, and they will all stay synchronized. So I think this is important for that. I think we're going to have to change the way, we're going to have to be a lot more careful with how we update UI state now that we have we're going to be sort of supporting multiple windows now.
There's a lot of caveats that I, they're likely going to come up that I noticed as I was looking at the code samples they gave that in that talk. And maybe that's a discussion for another episode, but there's likely going to be a lot of confusion with naming of things, where people are going to be calling state and that bindable object as a model, but they're not always are. Like specifically with the bindable object, it's more of a stream of data, and the models are what you send down to the view with as
via data? Via the stream.
Via the stream, yeah. But people and Apple actually already calls it a model, which again, all sorts of confusions because of that likely going to come up. So we'll have to kind of, when we all get to it and get more experience with it, figure out the best practices there. But the concept is already, it's not new. It's been around, well, with functional reactive programming, right? And the concept of streams and passing them, or storages that contain streams of data in them, has been around, and we should adopt that to sort of properly name things.
So, okay, now that we kind of filled in a little more information there, why are you, so let's put aside the argument of, let's say someone said, I'm only using this on one platform, Swift UI. Would you still be against it in that case? Or not against it, but perhaps not so excited for it?
No, in that case, I'm actually fine with it, right? It's for the all the reasons you mentioned, it's a declarative UI. It's an sort of more more advanced and modern concept of, well, reacting to changes, things like that, right? And it's actually, again, a more pure MVVM binding setup. I personally do prefer that. My concern is mostly about mixing platforms and having code branch out, because it will, if you're not properly, don't properly structure it. But other than that, no, it's great.
How does this differ from, let's say you did Rx Swift? So let's say you're using a lot of these sort of the recommended, let's say you're using a lot of the recommendations that they gave here already in Swift Rx. Is there a difference?
That's the thing. There is no, as far as I can tell, there is no difference. You already were able to do all of that, everything that they mentioned, with Rx or Reactive Cocoa, any FRP framework, or almost any. But the only one thing you'd have to do was set up all the bindings and that plumbing yourself. That's pretty much it. Right now, well, you still do have to do some setup, but they make it way easier and built in, especially with all those property directives. They're, I don't even know, they're like built into language itself. It's very odd.
Yeah. But. So, okay, let me put it this way. Let's say tomorrow you have to build an iOS 13 application from scratch, and they say it's very strange because the... your how do you say the person who hires you?
Employer.
Well, I was thinking more of a contractor.
Oh. Well, client.
Okay, so let's say you're starting a new app, right? And your client is a eccentric millionaire who is interested in many topics, and one of them is programming, and he insists that you use FRP, this functional sort of approach. And that's the requirement, programming-wise. Would you use Swift UI, or would you use the existing Rx Swift?
Well, first of all, bad client, I would fire and walk away because, you know, I'm the expert. But maybe, I mean, I guess there is no harm. It's sort of hard to say because I don't have experience with it specifically, right? No one does except, I guess, Apple people who were working with it already. But I think, yes, as long as the whole idea and the reason behind doing that, oh, and then we will take it and run it on iPad as is, or on a Mac as is, that's not going to happen.
Right, but that would be the same case with the RX Swift example. Like, if they said use RX Swift, that would be the same case.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, so it seems to me more that you are more concerned with people thinking that this is a grand unified abstraction for many platforms, and they're going to be trying to fit the round peg in the square hole kind of ideal.
Precisely, yeah. My beef is not with the reactiveness of it and functional reactive programming nature of it. That's actually great. My problem is the UI sharing, right? And, well, the idea that it's going to work everywhere without no change.
What grade do you give this?
Oh, grades. I still need to assess it fully. And I have two answers for you. Right now, it's a C+. Because I don't know certain details that I would like to find out about. And if the idea I have confirms, then maybe B+. And specifically, the thing I want to find out is whether all this new binding object protocol specifically, whether I can use it standalone headless without UI or not. If I can, and it's sort of abstracted from the UI piece, then yes, B+. If not, if it's only possible to use when it's coupled with the UI and it comes in the box, then no, probably only C+, maybe.
Very tough crowd here.
Tough, yeah. Well, Andrew, how about you? Would you use it today? Let's say, you know, you're on a brand new SWAT team at Reddit to like rewrite a portion of your app, and you guys only gonna publish it in September when officially iOS 13 is out for everyone, and they're asking you like, no, do it in Swift UI. Would you?
I mean, if they're paying me, I'll do anything. Well, within reason, if it's legal and ethical. But I would not reach for it right away if I'm developing a new product right now, because I feel like I'm going to go ahead and let other people sort of be the people to kind of work through the kinks and figure things out. And I feel like I would do a wait and see. But I think right now it's a great thing to play with. And I think that I think Apple is sort of moving in the right direction. And I think probably in the typical fashion, there's probably some things that I will not agree with, as I find the case to be oftentimes with the SDKs and sort of frameworks Apple provides. But for the most part, I think this is the future. I think the fact this declarative UI is very useful, and I think this will help reduce a certain class of bugs that is very common. So I'm excited for it. I am also cautious of thinking of this as the grand unified view abstraction, because there's fundamental differences between platforms. You may have on iOS a hamburger menu or whatever, but instead on your iPad you have a side
master details layout.
But on iPad, you may have a master detail layout. And on your Mac, you may have a completely different layout. So I don't see it as like this grand unified. I think that's, unless you're okay with all your apps kind of looking somewhat the same. I mean, if you look at the apps that they've started making using the new, what is it, the new Catalyst framework.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you look at the new apps that they made using the Catalyst framework, they don't look like typical Mac native apps.
Right? They look like an iPad app on a Mac.
They look like an iPad app on a Mac, and that's because they're fundamentally different. And I don't think there's any way around this. There's just like they're fundamentally different. You're trying to, like with abstractions, when you try to fit many things within one abstraction, you're always giving up a little bit. That's the nature of an abstraction. You cannot map directly to the concrete details of something. Otherwise, you wouldn't need the abstraction. You could just use the concrete details itself. And that's kind of what like UIKit is, right? For the most part. So, yeah.
It's you and I worked on a cross-platform application of ours. And that's and cross-platform meaning iOS with Mac, right? We would have the same code base, all the business logic shared between the two, and only UI being implemented concrete for each platform. And that's precisely the problem that we had. The sort of the difference at the end of the day, of course, UI is different, but the main problem was that you cannot really share with unless you have making compromises for one of the platforms, is the flow of the app, if you will, right? The logically how things go, right? From and what screens displayed at a given time, things like that.
Yeah. I do think it will work if you're okay with having a stock looking standard Apple app. Which, you know, that's fine. I'm not saying that's bad, but I found most employers or clients, everyone wants their own like sort of unique
right.
look and feel because it's part of the branding of the company, right?
Also user experience, right? On a Mac, you probably want to have a bit different one, right?
Well, what I'm saying is, let's say your client said, you know what, it's fine if we have the Apple look and feel and the user experience, I'm fine with that. Let's just write the one UI implementation and try to wrap them up into a single abstraction. I think if you want the standard Apple look and feel, like your client is asking for that, and using one view layer implementation, or at least reusing a lot of the view layer implementation, I think it'll actually be okay. But you will be making trade-offs, I think. I think you will not have this bespoke, custom user experience that I've found most companies want, because that's part of the branding of them, right? Like Apple wants your app to look like an Apple app because that's part of their branding, which is part of their interest ultimately. But that's kind of what I think will happen.
Cool. Well, that was our take on sort of, well, not the first impressions of Swift UI, but I guess second impressions now. And we'll have more episodes about it as we sort of play with it, and eventually it's going to be in production, so we'll be using it in our real apps and huge code bases.
Actually, before we end, I want to bring up another thing I read. I was reading online on the interwebs. Some people were saying, "Oh, this is Apple trying to jump on the latest sort of programming trend bandwagon." This is what. A lot of other, I think Flutter they mentioned, and a lot of web frameworks work very similar with this, like reactive binding view state and all this. And they were saying like, oh, you know, like imperative programming is just like, yes, there's more plumbing and sometimes things get out of sync, but this is what has worked for the longest time, and like nothing's for free. So they were sort of criticizing this as that. Do you think this is that?
Maybe, but likely not. So the impression I've got is that they actually thought it through, and it seems like it's been in the works for quite a while. So it's not just something put together, well, within the last 6 months or something, because Flutter and React came up with that. Seems more a bit more thought through, you know, and also specifically the two sides of it, not just the UI, reactiveness of the UI, and well, on that side of it, but also there's data bindings and streams and FRP part, right? I think I don't think so. I don't think Apple is the one to jump on bandwagons. They usually, they probably, if nothing else, they just stick to their guns and stay with whatever they used to have for a very long time. And that's what it was, UIKit, right?
Is this React? Is it another take on React?
Yes and no. I think I was mistaken at first because I clearly judged it as a pure React thing. It's not. It's more of a FRP MVVM.
Can you quickly describe what the difference between React and Swift UI?
So in React concept, you would... changes would propagate down the tree of your UI tree and through property objects, so-called props, right? That's basically your state data structure that you pass in. And then there would be a difference under the hood, the difference computed or calculated between the tree of data of props properties that was already there and the new tree that you're sort of passing from the top down. And then that difference would the algorithm would identify the difference and re-render only the parts that differ. So there you still are able to sort of change individual parts of it, not from the top of the tree, but somewhere in the middle. But it's a bit harder, and you have to sort of the whole model does not encourage it.
Which model, Swift UI?
The React model. But with Swift UI and the bindings, actually the idea is that you don't have to update everything from the root of the tree and sort of start propagating your change down from there through properties. But instead, you inject your dependencies, right? Your states and your binding objects. And then through FRP, you bind UI to them. And then they, as the data comes in those objects, you update only certain parts of your app, reacting to the change in the data, if that makes sense.
How about the data paradigm? How does this differ than React? Like, I know React has sort of this idea of like there's sort of a monolithic data structure that represents the entirety of your application. Is this similar or different?
So in React itself actually doesn't have it. It misses that part. React is only the UI piece, right? And therefore, there are design patterns to fill that gap, like Redux, or they had something else before that, Action something thing, I forgot. But the conceptually, they are more singleton-focused, if you will. There is only one single Redux store of source of truth for the entire state of your entire application's UI. And every change in your UI that you would want to make, you send messages to that Redux store, if you will. And then it through the tree of the UI, it propagates the change down. And then as the change goes down, as I mentioned, the algorithm behind the scenes computes the difference so that it efficiently updates only the necessary parts of the UI. With Swift UI, the difference is that you don't need to go top to bottom like that. Your data storage of your state, if you will, can be distributed among multiple objects. And only certain leaves or portions of your UI bound to some of them. So it's a more distributed, decentralized system. In that sense, well, again, it's more pure MVVM bindings. And it more flexible. Like, I prefer that way.
Okay. You heard it here, folks. C+ from Alex.
C+. Right.
I give it grade and incomplete because I don't have enough information. But I will say I look forward to seeing the evolution of this. And it's exciting that Apple is trying new things out and sort of get to see the community react to them and see what they like and see what they don't like and grow and learn. It's going to be great.
Can't wait to see all the fights at work with people who still want to do old UI kit way or UI view way, and then the new hot shots who want to do Swift UI.
Hey man, those frames. I know where they are. I know the X and Y coordinate and the width and height. Simple. Nothing hiding under the hood there. Everything is clear as day. And you get the performance.
That's what I heard about storyboards too. Oh, you can see everything there.
Oh. Okay.
That's it for today, guys. Again, as we mentioned, we'll kind of cover more in depth as we gain experience with this new tech.
Thanks very much for listening, guys. You can find us at InsideIOSDev on Twitter. Email us at hello@InsideIOSDev.com. Smash that like button. Hit that subscribe. Ring that bell. I don't know. I was watching my little brother and the YouTuber say that. The youngins say that these days. Subscribe, though. We need listeners.
Share it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much. Take care. Bye.
Bye.